Christmas is a holiday season that, more than any other holiday, it seems, creates a longing for home. A longing to be at home, by the fire, on a snowy evening, with presents around the tree, with family, with those we love. To put pajamas on and watch a Hallmark movie. Just kidding. We'll leave that part out of it. I'm not a big Hallmark Christmas Hallmark movie fan myself. But we want to be home for Christmas. I think of the song, I'll Be Home for Christmas. That song that was written in the 40s during World War II from the perspective of a serviceman who's overseas, which is fitting based on Gene's prayers today, longing to come back home, especially during Christmas, especially to be home with children, a spouse, with family. I have never been in the service, but I have a coming home for Christmas story myself. The year after I graduated from college, I got engaged to Michaela, and for those 6 months I was away in California, working for a nonprofit out there and doing a fellowship. So from July to December, I was there. And when it wrapped up and December came, as much as I loved the Bay Area, loved living there, I really wanted to come home to Michaela. I had not seen her hardly at all for 6 months. We were engaged. I missed her. So I made plans with my brother Jordan and my cousin Andrew that they were going to fly out with me and we were going to road trip all the way home. They were going to help me move back. And so I took my car to the mechanic in just south of San Francisco, and they took a look at my rusty Ford Taurus and said, yeah, I wouldn't drive this across the country. my brakes were shot, which I had been driving all these cliffs and turns, and you know, it's a blessing I did not crash my Taurus. But the car was not worth any more than $2,000, so I didn't want to put $2,000 worth of brakes into it, so the plan was to just get a different car. Get a newer car. Mason knows what I'm talking about. So that's a story in and of itself. I won't get too much into that. But going to dealers in California, the prices are a little bit more than they are here in the Midwest. So that was a journey. Finally, I found on eBay the car. It was this pristine Honda Element with low mileage, a great owner, and it was less than Blue Book value. So the only catch was, though, it was a manual. And I didn't drive manual at the time. So I called up my cousin Andrew, and I said, can you fly out here, teach me how to drive this, and we'll drive home. So he had driven his dad's manual a little bit. So he said, yeah, sure, you know, we can do that. And that's another story in and of itself. I nearly killed my brother, you know, figuring out how to navigate that clutch. I flung the car in reverse and nearly hit him. So no one died. We didn't crash. I had a lot of cars, a lot of horns honked at me, a lot of stalls at stop signs. But finally, it was good enough that I could drive it on the highway. So we left. We started driving east on I-80, approaching Tahoe National Forest, where the elevation starts increasing. And the day before we had left, we had been at my church there in Half Moon Bay, and someone made the comment, oh, so are you going to put the snow tires on before you drive home? And I thought to myself, what kind of joke is this? You know, you live in 60-degree weather all the time. I've grown up in Michigan. I know how to drive in snow. So anyway, as we're approaching the mountains, and I'm driving the manual, very, very uncomfortable with this, The elevation starts to pick up, and instantly it drops from 50 degrees to 30 degrees, and the snow starts coming down. And then we see signs that say semi-trucks must put on tire chains. And then we see other cars pulling over and putting on their tire chains. And I looked at the guys, and I said, I have no idea how to put these on, so I don't think we need them. Nah, we're good. So I tell you, as we're climbing the mountains, it just starts blizzarding. And I would be comfortable driving in that in Michigan, where it's flat, but driving in the mountains in a blizzard is a different story. It's more like sledding, right? Where when you're in a sled, the only way you're stopping is if you're crashing or hitting something bigger than you are. and I'm building this up here. Fortunately, somehow, by the grace of God, we did not crash there in Tahoe. But this blizzard, which turned into just a normal snowstorm, this followed us the entire way home. And so every stop, we stopped in Salt Lake City, and my cousin Andrew is not, he's adventurous enough to do this with me, but he's starting to say, all right, I think we need to slow it down. I think we need to stay overnight here at the hotel. Let's just wait for the snowstorm to pass. And he is 6'7" and just crammed, you know, his knees up over his shoulders in my Honda Element, which he had to get back surgery years later because of this trip. But I said, no, I got to get home for Christmas. I don't want to be away from Michaela for another day, so we're going to keep moving. So we get to Wyoming, okay, and we cut south to go down to my uncle's in Denver, and there the snow picks up again. And it's just this nightmare getting to Denver. And we stop there, and Andrew says, we should stay another night. We should wait. My mom's worried about us. We should wait here in Denver. And of course, I said, no. I can't miss another night. I got to get home for Christmas. So we drive to Kansas City, where I have other family to stay. And sure enough, the storm followed us all the way to Kansas. And again, Andrew says, we need to wait. We need to let the storm blow over. And I said, no, I got to get home for Christmas. And that night we had a nice storm, and then the roads were a sheer ice rink. And my windshield, the windshield wiper fluid, the nozzles froze over, and so I had no windshield wiper fluid, and so salt covered my windshield. I couldn't see a thing. And Andrew says, we got to slow down. we got to take it easy, Jackson. And of course, We're going full steam ahead. Ice, wind, visibility or not, we're going to get home for Christmas. So we got to Spring Arbor, Michigan late, dropped Andrew off. My Aunt Linda wanted me to stay, and I said, nope, we're going. It's after midnight. We're going to keep driving to Michaela's house. And I'll never forget that feeling when I pulled in at 3 a.m. with my brother to my in-law's house, and we had finally made it. We had come, it wasn't my house, but we had come home. I had reached my destination. And it was quite the journey. Well, our scripture today is about a homecoming. It's actually the great homecoming. It's a prophecy about God promising to bring his people home. In every sense of the expression. So Jeremiah is written when Jerusalem has been overtaken by the Babylonians and God's people have been taken into exile. They've been taken from their homes and just dispersed across the Babylonian and the Persian Empire. And it was a bit like when Adam and Eve left the garden. They had lost paradise. They had disobeyed the Lord. They had not heeded his calling. They continued to worship idols and run from him. And as a result, he lifted his hands of protection, and they were dispersed and were drug far, far from home. But despite this tragedy that for hundreds of years God's people have had to wrestle with, what has happened to us? How did we end up away this far from home? And despite that tragedy, God gives them a promise that sustained his people for hundreds of years. I will not forget you. One day I will come for you and bring you home. As Elisha read, I am going to bring them from the land of the north and gather them from the farthest parts of the sea. With weeping they shall come, and with consolation I will bring them back. Like all of the Old Testament, this passage points us to Jesus. All of the Old Testament, every part of the Bible that you read, you can see Jesus between the lines. And this points to Christmas. It points to that day when these promises finally began to happen. And God kept his word and God was faithful. And Jesus, who was God in flesh, he left his home. He left the extravagant power of God. He was not limited to space. He was not limited to time. And he put on a body. He became fragile. He became bound by time. He did not have the same freedom that he had always experienced as fully God and only God. He became human. And he came to bring us home. He came into the world to make the world home once again. And like the Jews have been taken into exile, you and I have been essentially estranged from God. We find ourselves away from him. We find ourselves not at home. Even if you've grown up in Indiana or in Cass County or Miami County your whole life, in a way, you are not home yet. You are separated from God in some way, or you have been. We have been. To us who have worshipped false gods of money, success, and pleasure, Jesus has come to bring us home to a God that will, the only God that will truly satisfy us. To us who are lonely and isolated, separated from people we love, Jesus came to bring us home, back into family. To us who sin and are not at peace with ourselves and in our own bodies, Jesus has come to bring us home, to resurrect our bodies, to renew our homes. He's come to bring us prodigal sons and daughters home, to the Father who is waiting at the end of the driveway with open arms saying, "Come home to me, come home to me." Jesus has come to gather us from the corners of the earth, as our passage in Jeremiah says, to gather us from the north, to gather us from the east, to bring all people back to his home, to bring all people back to be home with him. And this is the gospel. The gospel is a great homecoming. So what might that look like for you today to come home? If you live in your house you've lived for decades and you look around and you say, "I am home," but how do we return home? How do we find Jesus and return to him? This past New Year's, we gathered with my extended Moore family in Spring Arbor, Michigan, which are my dad's parents and my aunts and uncles and my cousins and their kids and my mom and my brother. And Michaela will tell you that we are an odd group of people. When she visited, we went to school in Spring Arbor, and my family, a lot of them lives there. And so Michaela came for dinner one night, and we sang boisterously before we ate together. And Michaela looked at me and said, "What is going on here?" Or if you come to our family gatherings, it's a full house and it's loud and there's people everywhere in every corner talking intensely about anything, philosophy, politics, movies, discussing and arguing, debating the last board game we played and analyzing like every move that someone could have made that was wrong or they could have done better. As every family does, my family has lived together through great tragedies. They've lived together through great celebrations. I remember as a kid standing with my family at the intersection where my dad was killed and singing "Be Thou My Vision" together, and not a dry eye was in the group. I remember at my wedding them telling stories of me rolling down a flight of stairs as an infant and then singing a beautiful song of blessing over Michaela and I as we embarked on marriage. It's a special group for me, and they're not my immediate family, but they are absolutely my family. And whether we gather in Kansas or whether we gather in Michigan, to go to them, whether it's been a year or 2 years since I've been back, it's always a return home for me. And returning to my family, for me, illustrates in a number of ways what it means to return home to Jesus. When we were planning our December gathering, earlier this fall when we were planning our gathering for this past week, I'm really bad with planning, and so I did not let my cousin know we were coming to stay with him. And so I let him know. I was very late to the game, and I was worried, there's not going to be room. We're going to have to stay in a hotel, and we're going to have to leave early every night to put the kids to bed. So I messaged Cameron, and I said, "All right, hey, we're coming. Is there any room for us?" And within 5 minutes, he messaged me back, "Great, Jackson, so excited you're coming. We have two bedrooms for you. Not just one, we have two, and you can stay at our house." And I just couldn't believe it. There's room for us? There's two bedrooms? We don't have to all sleep in a tiny room together? You mean to tell me there's going to be like over 20 people staying at your house and you have two bedrooms for me? And as we return to home to Jesus, we find we always have a place. There is always a room for us. There's always a bedroom, a place to come, to find rest. If we will come, there's a place for us. And not only is there a place for us, but it is a place that we belong. So there's a place for us, and we belong there. We are wanted there. We are loved there. With my family, I belong. I am known. I belong there simply because I'm a Moore, because I have that last name and I am Marcel's son. So therefore, I can be gone for 5 years and still come back, and I'm one of them. And because of what Jesus has done, because he has come, because he has gathered us, when we are baptized in his name, we are marked, we are given his name. We belong. We are one of his. And so no matter how far you move away, no matter how much you distance yourself, you are part of the family. You have been marked by him. If you will come back, there's a room for you where you are wanted. And as we return, as we find ourselves at home with Jesus and in God's family, we find our true identity. We find who God is and what he has made us to be. The Moore family has a very strong family identity. If you can't pick that up through my little tidbits about my family, I am a Moore, and I have a very strong identity of what that means. And when I come to these family gatherings, I'm reminded not only that I'm loved and that I belong, but I'm reminded of who I am. And I'm inspired by this vision, not only of who I am, but who I want to be. And I come home reminiscing of all the conversations we've had and all of these family that I've seen, and I think, I want to live differently because of who I am. And I want to live into this family identity. It changes who I want to be. It changes how I want to live in the future. And it's a bit like that as we come home to Jesus, too. As we come to that place where we are wanted and loved and belong, more and more we get this glimpse and this vision of who we can become and who we ought to become, and this new way of being that just is not losing ourselves, but it's becoming more and more of who God's made us to be. We find a way of living that's richer and fuller than we ever could have imagined. And yes, we leave behind our rugged edges, we leave behind our destructive traits, we leave behind our sin, but we find ourselves. And as we come to Jesus, we find who he has made us to be and what he has desired for us all along. So Jesus has come to us. He has come to gather us from the north and the east, from all the corners of the earth, to bring us home. And coming home isn't always easy, is it? Whether it's our earthly home with our immediate families, or whether it's coming home to God's big family, it's more of a rugged road trip across the country through blizzards than it is just walking across the street when we're ready. And for each of us, coming home looks different. Each of us have been drugged to a different corner of the world, and each of us have a different journey back home. Some of us have been drugged further than others. So how might Jesus be calling you home today? What might be the direction home for you? Is God calling you to get to know Him, to trust Him, to believe that He really does love you? Is God calling you to find reconciliation with a loved one, to find peace in your own family that He's given you? Nothing makes a home more unhomey than strife and bickering and arguing. Is God calling you to be at home within yourself, within this body that He's made for you? Is He calling you to trust that you are forgiven, to trust that you are loved, to trust that you belong? As we conclude the Christmas season, may we seek home with the urgency that we want to be home for Christmas. That with the urgency that compelled me to drive day after day to get home to Michaela. May we hear Jesus' voice calling us and beckoning us, come home, come home. May we find a loving Father with outstretched arms. May we find His love, His forgiveness, His healing, His belonging. May we find His kingdom. May we find it. Amen. Let's pray.